Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast about children's development from the Center for Inclusive Childcare.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel, the Executive Director, and I'm here today with one of our regular guests and experts in early childhood safety, Sarah Hawley, who is a public health nurse, and she also owns Minnesota Child Care Health Consultants. And she has been with us so many times to talk about things and just remind us about those critical pieces of early childhood licensed child care. And today we're going to talk about safety in the summertime. So, Sarah, welcome.
Thank you, Priscilla. Good to be here. Always fun to be back with you.
Well, we have a lot to talk about today because we're podcasting from Minnesota, and it's hot and summery. And we know that with that time of year comes a lot of safety needs and reminders. And so, Sarah, why don't you just start us out with what we need to be remembering at this time of year, and then we'll kind of break it down a little bit more.
Okay. Yep. Sounds good. And I think what comes to mind first off is you think of it's bright and sunny out today and it's hot and it's like classic summer day here in Minnesota. So sun safety, the use of sunscreen, hydration is really important, getting enough liquids, water, and then probably a little bit of touch on some first aid things that come up, such as bug bites, maybe even ticks, skin, knees, and elbows, just because, you know, we're outside and running and free. And a lot of those things do come up a little bit more often, you know, in the summer months.
Definitely. And so when we think about preparation, let's talk about sunscreen. And that's how we kind of set the stage for success in one way, among the other things you noted. So what about sunscreen do we need to be reminded about?
Yeah, sunscreen's super important. Before I jump into that, let's just touch on like just overall sun safety. So infants under 6 months of age, they should actually stay out of direct sunlight, and we don't put sunscreen on them. So with an infant under 6 months of age, it's still good for them to get outside and get fresh air, but you want to look for some shade, like under a tree, you know, maybe an umbrella, even a stroller canopy. Those are usually on the strollers these days. And then it's really recommended that they wear maybe some protective clothing, or even just a hat or a cap with, you know, the brim to shield their face. With infants older than 6 months, you can apply sunscreen. And I definitely want to talk more in detail about sunscreen, but with the older infants, it's fine to put it all over their body. Just be really careful to keep it away from their eyes because, you know, if they get irritated or anything, they'll rub it in their eyes. Mm-hmm. And if they do that, then, you know, you can just wipe their hands clean with a damp cloth and just, you know, kind of rinse out their eyes. Typically we'll do it. And then we want to limit sun exposure for everyone, if possible, as much as possible, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., just when those UV rays are the strongest. And that's not always possible, so that's why we need to, you know, apply sunscreen. So with sunscreen, one thing we get a lot of questions on, I've got darker skin tone, do I need to wear sunscreen? And really, everyone should wear sunscreen. That is the recommendation for 6 months of up, regardless of their skin color. So the Environmental Protection Agency says that sunscreen is needed for a UV of 3 or higher. And you can go on the EPA or Environmental Protection Agency website, and they've got all the information right there, you know, with the UV information on their website. So that's a good resource. And it doesn't take a lot to get to a UV of 3 or higher. So it's pretty often that we're wearing sunscreen, especially in the summer. And I think one thing that I have seen that works really well for child cares with multiple children in care is to bulk purchase sunscreen. So it's used for all the children in care. Of course, you need to run it by the parents. You need to get the parent or guardian to give written authorization. So you would let them know, like, we provide this X, Y, and Z type of sunscreen. Do you give permission for us to apply it to your child? And what I would also recommend is some kids can have sensitive skin to sunscreen, so it's not a bad idea to send the parents home with a little bit of it before it's ever applied at childcare so that they can try it, make sure there's no reaction, that they tolerate it okay. But that just, you know, that just eases things so that you don't have 45 different kinds of sunscreen. Now, of course, occasionally you're going to have a child that says, nope, they're allergic to all kinds. We have to use this kind, or it's parent preference. We want this kind, and that's fine. Then they bring it. You label it with the first and last name, and you do still need to have written authorization. Okay. But for the most part, I would just try and do that bulk purchase of one type of sunscreen and try and get the container with a pump, just because it's ease of application. When you think about, you know, if it's a preschool room and you're putting sunscreen on 20 kids to go outside,
right?
And that's a lot of kids. It's like snow pants in the winter and sunscreen in the summer. It's just a lot of time, but it's so important. One thing I do see a lot of centers when they get into it, and it is a lot of work, they say, oh, can we use aerosols? And that's just really not recommended in group childcare. It's hard for kids with asthma, can put particles in the air, can be trouble with breathing. So I'd stay away from that and just try and, like I said, do the bulk purchase and get a pump if you can. And then other things with it, you know, you want to make sure that it has time to absorb in the skin. So if you can apply it about 30 minutes before going outdoors, that is best, because that way it's absorbed into the skin. And then you put it all over all exposed areas, especially the face. Just like I said before, avoid the eyes, but you want to get on the, you know, the ears, the feet, hands, and just rub it in really well. And then reapplication is every couple hours, and maybe more frequently if you're doing any sort of water play. Sure. Broad spectrum sunscreen, so it blocks both UVA and UVB rays. When you think about purchasing that, is what you would want to look for, and a product that has an SPF of 15 or more for that rating. And then I would say too, like if kids ever have like a rash or broken skin, you might want to have their parents check with their primary healthcare provider to make sure it's okay for you guys, you know, to put on sunscreen. You know, if they've got open skin or anything, you might want to get a note, and then just make sure that you're washing hands before and after and wearing gloves if you're, you know, putting it on a child that has open skin or anything.
Well, and I'm thinking as you're describing the trying to put it on 30 minutes before you head outside, you know, that's a great time. You could do like a group song or story time. And while one teacher's leading, the other teacher is sunscreening up, so that you don't have this line of kids just sitting there waiting, because we know waiting is not easy for a preschooler, for any young child. And so making sure that you're giving them something to do while you're slathering them up for safety. And I think your recommendation of trying to stay out of the sun during those peak hours, as we know in childcare, sometimes that's the time you get the playground. And so you sometimes drive by some of these childcare settings that do not necessarily have a lot of shade. If there's parents or grandparents listening today too, making sure that where your child or grandchild is has an opportunity for your child to go to some place that is out of that hot beating sun. That's so important.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think of that too when I drive past childcare centers and stuff. And that just is a good reminder of why sunscreen is so important. And even the protective clothing, or you can get the protective sunglasses too. Just make sure on a playground you want them to be shatter resistant.
That's good.
But any of those things. But yeah, you're right. Sometimes with scheduling, if there's a playground schedule and it's a big full center, it is hard to, you know, avoid 10 or 11 a.m. You know, someone's going to go out then so everyone can use it. But so just remember lots of sunscreen and reapplication just to protect the child from a sunburn.
Definitely. Well, we've got that prepared. We've got the kids prepared with their safety on their sunscreen. So then next, what do we think about when you think about you mentioned hydration, which is another way we can prepare and how we provide water and water breaks. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. Well, in general, water should always be available no matter what time it is, what time of the year it is. So it should always be available to children throughout the day. But when it's hot and in the summer months, you know, especially if they're outside and they're sweating, they're going to need it even more. So that can really be accomplished in several different ways. And each, you know, program needs to consider what works best for them. There's some programs that have a drinking fountain outside. That would be fine. You can take a big like igloo type of jug outside and fill it with water and have the little disposable cups. Or each child can now have their own water bottle. That is okay with licensing. It's just if you go the water bottle route, you have to have a written policy for having water bottles just to ensure that the child's using their own and to also ensure that they get washed. So okay. You would label it with the child's first and last name, have a plan where they're going to be stored and how you're going to hopefully ensure that another child isn't grabbing, you know, their friend's water bottle, that they each have their own. And then it either needs to go home every night and have the parents wash it, or you can keep it at the center and wash and sanitize it each night. But just considering those things, that's a good way to do it. But there's no wrong or right for any of the methods. It's just that realizing hydration is really important and there's multiple ways to accomplish that.
And I'm picturing, so I'm, you know, you're out in childcare all the time. I would guess that, you know, family childcare would be a lot easier to manage those individual water bottles. But when you're out at centers, what are some things that you're seeing folks do to keep track and make it so that there's not everybody just grabbing everybody's water bottles?
Yeah, I've seen like the clear like storage totes that had all the water bottles in, and then they, you know, so-and-so, Susie wants a drink of water. She comes up to the teacher and asks for hers. And so then she can look and grab the bottle with Susie's name on it. So that works really well. But if you just leave them out all over, the children might not even notice and grab, you know, Tommy's water bottle or something like that. So I've seen that. That works pretty well. Just, you know, having the teacher kind of monitor it. And then one thing I should say too, infants under 6 months, again, they do not need water. So their hydration is always going to come from, you know, breast milk or formula. All their nutritional needs are met with that. So you don't need to give infants under 6 months extra water.
Okay. All right. Great point to know. And so we're hydrated, we're sunscreened up. Now we get outside, and that's when all the fun begins, because there's a lot of things that can happen to little ones when they're out on the playground or out on a field trip or just walking and playing at the park.
Yeah. I would say the one thing is bug bites, especially in Minnesota. So one thing is there are requirements for staff, whether you're in family child care or in a center based, that everyone needs first aid training every 2 years. So they definitely go over, we teach it and we go over, you know, bug bites and ticks and that sort of thing. So you'll get an overview. And then you should always have a current first aid manual on site. You can even do first aid posters in addition to the manual that, you know, is just a quick reference that you can look for some really common things. But I would say one thing is bug bites. We see that. A minor bug bite, just wash it with soap and water, you know, where the bite occurred. And then you might need to use an ice pack or a cool pack just to help reduce swelling and comfort the child. Of course, you always want to watch for an allergic reaction. Bee stings is another one. So if you have children with known bee sting allergies in your care, you want to make sure that everyone is aware, all the staff are aware, and that in close proximity is their allergy action plan and their emergency medications, such as if they have an EpiPen or like a Benadryl type of medication.
Yeah.
So out of access, they cannot be accessible
to children.
In quick access of staff. So sometimes what centers will do is the staff person outside with them will wear a fanny pack with it or a little backpack, or if they have doors that open up to the playground, they'll be hanging right there on a hook on that door just so that staff can grab it within seconds and not have to go in, you know, walk down the hall, go, you know, up to the front, to the office. That's too much time. It needs to be within quick access.
Oh, that's
cool. But just being aware of those children. And sometimes there's a child that'll, or even a staff person that gets stung by a bee and they didn't know that they were allergic because they've never been stung before. So just, you know, being aware of all those things. And, you know, if they would go into anaphylaxis or something and didn't have emergency medications, of course, then it would be a 911 call.
Definitely. And can I just, one other thing too, that I recall from my teaching days, you know, really be monitoring the playground as well and the play area, so that if you're noticing beehives or, you know, just there's so many, bees can be very, very busy over the weekend and create these wonderful structures that you didn't see on Friday. And so then you come outside. And so being aware of that, and also how you as a facility, as a setting, deals with those types of things in a safe manner before the kids come out.
Right. And every day someone should go out on that playground before the children go out. I know it's hard with staffing and everything, but it really should be part of the opening. Just as you would inside, you do a once over of the classroom just to see if there's anything, you know, broken or anything, you know, outlet covers out of place or something. Go out on the playground and do a look too, because over the weekend, you don't know what happened. You don't know what happened at night, or even if it's just trash has gotten thrown in there.
Right.
Or, you're in a church and there's another group that uses that play area on the weekend or at night. Just mm-hmm. make sure. So, and looking for those, you know, those wasp nests and that sort of thing. Yeah. Just make sure. That's a really good point. And then have a plan yeah. with what do you do about that? Do you have a maintenance person or what?
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we talked about bug bites, which could be, you know, a bunch of different insects, but ticks, that's yeah. another story.
Yeah. So that is one thing that is taught in first aid. There's a lot of programs that we work with that say we don't remove ticks. We just call the parents. And they've kind of explained that, you know, they just don't want the responsibility or whatnot. So always check your program policies. But it is something that has gone over in first aid classes that we teach. So you would be able to do it. But again, check your own individual programs, rules and regulations and, you know, policies. But it's pretty simple to remove a tick, you know, and you do want to get it off as soon as possible. So you just take a tweezers. I'm looking at my hand as I'm thinking about it. And you just grab it, you know, try to get the whole thing, and you're going to pull, don't twist or anything. Just pull up straight mm-hmm. up. Okay. And then make sure you got the whole thing, because sometimes a little piece of it might break off. So make sure that there's nothing left. And then I would always put it in a little baggie just in okay. case the person gets sick or the parents want to take it in to the doctor or something and see. Just save it, you know, just in case they
that's
want
a good
to
idea.
Or something. Yeah. And then make yeah. sure you wash the area with soap and water for sure. And then, you know, if there's any swelling or just even for comfort, you can use that ice pack or cool pack.
Sure.
And I would always recommend that, you know, after you remove a tick, if you remove it, or even if the parents pick up the child and they do it or whatnot, I'd probably call my child's primary healthcare provider just to say, hey, is there anything I need to do? Do you guys do preventative antibiotics or anything? Just to check. They may or may not. But then, you know, one thing you should always be watching for is that red ringed rash on the skin. You know, even if it gets red and irritated, or if you get, you know, sick with flu-like symptoms, then you want to call your doctor for sure.
That's helpful to be reminded of all those things. And of course, one of the things that is just super common, especially because young children aren't always as agile on their feet and they might trip and fall, skinned knees, skinned elbows, all of those things that happen when you're outside.
Yes. Another thing that's gone over in first aid class. So super yeah. important to take that training. It is such just a good overview background of all things first aid. But usually we see skin knees, skin elbows, bloody noses. Usually everything's pretty minor, not always, but typically, you know, it's just a child running and maybe there's some sand on the sidewalk from the play area or something and they slip and fall, or they're running too fast. Just like you said, they're still developing all those skills. But you're just going to want to stop the bleeding. So, you know, always put on gloves, protect yourself. And then you can take some clean gauze and you're just applying pressure, whether it's the elbow or the knee or whatnot, stopping the bleeding, even if there is any. Sometimes there's not. But always wash it with soap and water because you want to prevent infection. And then you can certainly put a bandage on it if it's needed. Many times it's not. Sometimes the child feels better if they get a bandage. It's a cute yeah. one. So that's fine too. You know, sometimes there's a bloody nose or something. Typically, like areas of the face, like the head and neck, are going to bleed the most just because there's so many blood vessels right there. So we do see a lot more bloody noses. You just have to pinch the soft part of the nostrils with, you know, gloved hands and some gauze. And those can be pretty persistent. You know, a lot of people will not go after a minute and the blood is still rushing down. It's really not emergent. And unless we get to about 15 minutes and it's not slowing down and still bleeding, then we might need to look for further care by a healthcare provider. But typically, you know, 7-8 minutes, you just have to be pretty persistent applying pressure and those will stop. And I would yeah. say with whether it's a bloody nose, skinned knee, skinned elbow, whatnot, any type of little minor bump up, you want to fill out an injury report. So make sure you have documentation, you know, the date, the time, the area where it happened, who was there, and what you did. And if there's anything on the face, I would always call the parents just to give them the heads up. No pun intended. Yeah. Give the heads up. So, you know, if this happens at 10 a.m., they don't, you know, come to get their child at 5 and think, oh my gosh, why didn't you call me if they've got a goose egg on their head or something like that. And obviously, if there's like a head injury or anything, or you're worrying about a concussion, concussions are also covered in first aid. But, you know, if there's any symptoms of a concussion, then they really need to go and be seen soon by a health provider. Yeah.
Oh, these are all such great reminders, Sarah. And I think that, you know, as we think about getting geared up for these warm weather days and lots of time outside, we want kids to be outside. We want them to be absorbing dirt and mud. National Mud Day is coming up. And you know, all the health benefits of playing in the dirt and getting outside, it's just so important for young children. But we also want that safety net around them. And we can do so much of that preparation work as the educators and the professionals who are caring for them. So thank you, Sarah, for all these amazing reminders. And if you want more information, you can also go to Sarah's website, Minnesota Child Care Health Consultants. And then we have a bunch of information on our website too at inclusivechildcare.org. And thank you for listening. And thank you, Sarah Hawley, for being with us again.
Thanks for listening. For more resources, visit us at inclusivechildcare.org.